Welcome to Reconceive, a Beyond Studio podcast, where two mental health therapists and a fitness coach explore the interweaving connections of mind, body, and spirit. Every episode covers an area of this connection and how we can reimagine ourselves and our world when we see these connections more clearly.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Reconceive. Shauna here, back with Melissa and Deborah, and today we're talking with Erin Owens. She's a neuromovement practitioner, and her company is Move Your Brain. Welcome, Erin. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for letting me come.
Thanks. Can you tell us a little bit about what neuromovement is and how you got into it?
Well, neuromovement is interesting. It's a combination. So there is something called the Anat Banyel method, which is actually the method and kind of philosophy behind the movement. So you can use the method with the movement, or you can use the method outside of the movement. So I'll talk a little bit about both. I will start with, however, how I even found out about it. When I was 30 weeks pregnant, my water broke and I had my baby early, and he went into NICU, and then it took a long time. We didn't know what was wrong. We just knew that he screamed all the time and that he cried and he was stiff as a board, mm-hmm. but nobody would really tell us that something was wrong. I don't know why, looking back about, you know, upon all that time, but in any case, at 1 year old, he was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. And after that, a lot of things started to make sense. We did all the traditional interventions that they recommend, OT, PT, really not speech at that time, but just anything to try and get him to move, to be more aware, be more comfortable. And it just wasn't working. And eventually we stopped doing the hospital route. And in Missouri, there's first steps, which is where the state therapy is run through actually the Department of Education, and they come into your home. And so we started doing that, and we had great therapists, but you just didn't progress very quickly or much, and they were a little frustrated. We were definitely frustrated, and I'm sure he was too. He wasn't able to tell us that, but
it must have been really scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things, looking back on it and going through it are two different things. And sometimes when you go through it, you're just like in survival mode.
Mm-hmm. So, you do what you have to do.
Yeah. And once you get enough distance, it's okay. But there's like this weird in-between time where you're like taking that deep breath and just, you know, yeah. Everything always works out. My dad always said that. He's like, it'll all work out. You never know how, but it'll work out. but anyway, near the end of when he was about to age out of first steps, his physical therapist asked us if we'd ever heard of a lady named Anat Banyel. And I'd never heard of her. And she's actually Israeli. She's lived in the States for many, many years. And we found ABM. I'm going to say ABM. That means Anat Banyel method. We found an ABM practitioner in Tulsa, and that was as close as we could find in our area to Springfield. So we traveled there, and he had one 45-minute lesson, and he was able to sit. And he had never been able to do that. He was almost 3 years old.
Wow.
And so my husband and I thought, well, this is kind of weird voodoo stuff, you know, because that's what you think when you don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. But we obviously saw something that was very impactful to him. And so we said, okay, we're going to figure out how to make this happen. Yeah. So I started taking him for lessons. And that's what we call the time we spend with our clients. We call them lessons. It's an educational method, and we are teachers, they are students, and these are lessons. Mm-hmm. And he kept learning, and we saw that, you know, we are going to be on this path for a while. And so I eventually was able to join a training So over 15 months just for the basic training, where I traveled for 2 weeks at a time. And over the course of 15 months, I got trained to do ABM. So that's how it came into our life. Mm-hmm. And I was working full-time as a controller in an advertising company, and then doing the training and practicing on the side. And then things ended. Our company actually sold, so I get to do this full-time now. And I get to work with people one-on-one and in group class type situations. So I can work with people one-on-one, hands-on. They can be on the table, on the floor, in a chair, but it's actually me moving them and helping really to facilitate, more than anything, them coming home to themselves and feeling themselves. And I think societally, culturally, we've been trained out of feeling ourselves in a lot of different ways. So that's the biggest thing that I do. I can't do a set of movements and say, this is going to fix your problem. That's not the way it works. It's not a linear method. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can only see where they are and support what they do, even if it's something that may seem like it's not beneficial to them. But I can support that in hopes that it actually brings their attention and awareness to it. Yeah. And once you become aware of something, you can have a choice to change it.
Yeah. This method, I have heard it called the anti-aging method, that it reverses the effects of aging. And I kind of think that that's there's some truth in that. So it's helped your son. You've seen progress, ongoing change.
Yes.
What kinds of changes?
So, I mean, after he started having lessons, we started getting a lot of words. He had about 4 words. He was almost 3 years old at that time. And then all of a sudden, there was this explosion of speech. He started being able to move around on his own. He, you know, CP runs the gamut. It is kind of, it presents itself differently for a lot of different kids. And also, it changes as children grow into adults. So you never know exactly what to expect with cerebral palsy. So for him, he's not walking yet, but he is moving around a lot easier. His spasticity has decreased a lot. He is so social. I just can't get over what... I mean, he's a very likable guy. He's also a little bit manipulative. So, you know, kids will...
It's to be manipulative.
Yeah. That might be developmentally absolutely appropriate.
Yep. But he is really doing well. And it works differently for different kids. So I've worked with children with autism. One little boy I saw had... I mean, I didn't know this until after they came back for their second lesson. My lessons with children are just 30 minutes long. And the second lesson, the mom came back and told me that night he'd slept through the night all night long, that he stopped having nightmares. So this little boy had nightmares all the time and would wake up for 2 and 3 and 4 hours during the night every night.
So we're talking about movement that seems to do something for... all kinds of cognition and emotional processes.
Yeah. Changing the patterns neurologically in the brain.
Yeah. And honestly, I am not going to be able to tell you exactly what happens in the brain that makes that happen. Mm-hmm. I really don't know.
Yeah.
And part of me wishes I could tell you, just maybe as validation. But the other part of me is fine with it. I'm just like, because we rely on the person. We are only a facilitator. So a lot of the method, and this is going towards the method, not necessarily the movement. A lot of the method is going slowly and gently, is supportive of what they're doing already, instead of saying, well, you're not, you know, you're not doing this, so that's what we're going to work on. That's definitely how I do not start with my clients.
Yeah.
Because for most people, that's going to take their brain to a place of being unsafe, of being scared, of thinking that they're failing before they've even started.
Shame.
And shame. Yeah, absolutely. And that's all they've experienced already. That's why they're there. And so when I can come to them and say, I see you, I hear you, I'm literally feeling you, but also trying to feel them emotionally and otherwise.
Deep empathy with them.
And
that's how the class feels. Now, I'm in your class. This is an adult class, and you're not literally moving us. Although you have.
I have touched you.
Yeah.
Yeah, with your permission. Yeah.
And it feels to me like an hour of deep meditation. We're focused on a part, and then another part, and then it's almost like a chain of parts. We're starting with one thing, like you're just moving this arm. But you're so focused on that. And the way you're describing the, you know, starting out with that movement, it's very gentle. This is not a strenuous thing. We're not, as you say, efforting. Yeah, it's totally.
But at the end, you're so exhausted. It's like I came out of Aaron's class just in this mental fog, and my body felt like I'd done all this hard work, and yet I think I moved maybe an inch the entire class. I was like, whoa, I'm done for the day.
And she even says, do this in your head. Do this in your imagination if you can't.
Yes.
Do it with your body.
But we know that reprogramming the brain is neurological changes take a lot of energy. It burns a lot of calories to make that happen.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. And some people, adults and children both, so they either tend, especially when you're doing a lot of lessons back to back. So in my training, as an example, people were either starving all the time, they couldn't get enough food, or they were asleep. Like sleeping 12 to 14 hours. If they weren't in class, they were asleep. So it just kind of like wipes, it either wipes you out or you just feel like you can't get enough energy. You're trying to get energy.
Regain the energy that you're expelling.
Either through sleep or through food. And I do see that with some of the kids I work with as well, because we work in intensive situations. A lot of traditional therapies, you go for an hour, maybe once a week. And I, in the way I work, I try my best to see people twice a day for 5 days in a row. So it is not necessarily an easy method.
It's like an intensive.
It's very intense. Yeah. And then we take 3 or 4 weeks off and then back at it. But you find that you make the change in the first lesson or two. So you're prepping. It's kind of like in the first lesson, you're getting to know a person, you're getting to know who they are that day, because we all are a little bit different every day. So I get to know them, and then we're doing the work together. And then the second time, you know, you probably started some changes in the first lesson, and then you're building. So that whole time, each lesson throughout the 10 or so lessons that are back to back, you're building, 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 building. And it's not to say that you will keep all of the changes you manage to have during the intensive, but it's more of an insulation process, so that you're building insulation and or context around some of those very first changes, so that you are more likely to keep those. So I could see somebody one time a week for, you know, whatever amount of time they wanted to come, but the chances that we would be redoing
repeating the same.
It's a lot of, you know, it's the same thing whenever you learn something new. If you don't do it a lot or find a way to use it functionally in your daily life, and you go back to it a week or 2 weeks later, you're like, I know I knew how to do this, but it's, why isn't it coming back to me? And it's that kind of very elusive thing. So this is just like you're wham-bamming the brain, the body, everything. Saying we're going to learn it. And we're going to learn it in this position, in this position, in this orientation, in this emotion. And it, you know, you're just, it's a variety. So you have maybe one focus, and then you try and build on it in a trajectory, like a sundial going across. So yeah. You're saying, I know it here. I know it with this slight change. I know it this slight change. I understand it here. Maybe there's a gap or I still don't know it, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. And
can you give an example of it? Like when you're saying it in this scenario, is it a certain body movement, position, physical skill?
So, yes. And I don't understand exactly how it all fits together, but it also parallels cognitively mm-hmm. with emotion. Like it really does all come together. So I don't have to work with somebody on their emotions.
Right.
For them to see changes, for them to be able to figure out, I only have this one path to take emotionally when this happens. Mm-hmm. Somehow, finding all these new routes via movement mm-hmm. helps them to understand and create new routes emotionally.
It translates. Mm-hmm. Like yesterday's mm-hmm. lesson was in the mouth. Mm. We were focusing on our mouths, our tongues, our teeth. We were feeling them from the outside of the cheek with the fingers. Erin had us imagining golden threads going across one back molar up onto the arch of the mouth and onto the corresponding or sister tooth on the other side. There were all of these mental exercises with moving the tongue, imagining the mouth having more spaciousness in it. By the end of the lesson, we were thinking about all sorts of space, that like the mouth becoming bigger, and space between every tooth, and space between the tongue and the bottom jaw, and everything getting more and more spacious. Which I gotta say, by the end of the lesson, not only was my whole head and neck and face and all that was deeply relaxed, but I have to say there was some learning taking place about what I normally have done with my face, with my mouth, and it's an emotional thing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think we talked in a previous episode on movement about how the face and the tongue holds a lot of tension, and our body posture and actions take on whatever our mouth and face mm-hmm. is expressing. So if we're frowning or we're serious, we can't move as freely. Right. But if we just smile and relax the face, we have more freedom of movement, more relaxed throughout the whole body.
Well, I feel like what we're talking about is that super subtle and constant feedback loop between brain and body, that our brain is always getting information from our body about what's happening in our environment and trying to interpret what's happening. And so, like, the example of the mouth, one of the things that I know we run into, Deborah and I, when we're doing actual trauma therapy in the traditional sense of trauma therapy, I frequently have people that when I ask them to check in with their bodies, when we're working on a trauma memory, what they experience is tension in their jaw and a feeling of like they're shoving their tongue on the roof of their mouth because it's such a normal tension spot. And one of the ways that we help people to release that is not only to physically release it, but also to ask that feeling questions, which I know sounds really weird, but when you're holding that tension there, and I ask people to tune into that tension and ask that feeling, what is it holding? What is it about? It is amazing how quickly and almost spontaneously and intuitive there's an answer to that, as if the body's intellect is answering us way before our cognition, our logic, our our normal thinking process. And the funny thing is that it answers, and people are consistently shocked, like, oh, it answered me. I wasn't expecting my body to tell me something, and then it does. And I think what you're talking about, Erin, is those kinds of experiences are healing because it teaches us that we can communicate with our body in a really meaningful way. And anytime that we can connect with it that way, it's healing because our brains and bodies are made to heal each other. And there's so much disconnection that happens, and that's where disease and dis-ease happens. But anytime we're reconnecting, healing is almost spontaneous and it feels like magic. And it's kind of that voodoo feeling of, I don't know what I'm doing here, but it's really amazing. And I'm just going to keep
and
doing
working.
It. And it's working. So we're not going to question it too much, because as you're talking, it's such similar experiences to what we do sometimes.
Yeah.
And just that really like almost energetic thing that happens when you're watching a person that gets connected for the first time. And it's like something really intense just happened. I don't have the words for it, but I'm not going to force it to explain itself. I'm mm-hmm. just going to trust that what's happening is amazing mm-hmm. and real, mm-hmm. right? And really validate what we're seeing in front of us. The other thing that I was thinking is when you were talking about the intensive, where you're doing it, you know, 5 days in a row, is that that is so in line with what we know about how the brain creates new neural networks, and we're creating that new little baby synapse. And yes. what I tell people is, okay, you create that new baby synapse and it's tiny and it's weak and it's brand new, like a little baby. And if we just leave it there and don't attend to it at all, the brain is really efficient and we'll just prune it away. It's like, I guess we don't need that. We only used it once and away it goes. We all know what this feels like when we study for a test and then never revisit the information. Mm-hmm. But when we keep revisiting it, and then what you were saying, where you revisit it in multiple different ways, every time we run that path again and every time we do it in a slightly different way, it's beefing it up and making it more accessible till eventually the scales tip and now it's spontaneous. It's just natural wisdom for the body. And so when you were talking about all that, I think that to me, that's what that sounds like. That
absolutely
sounds like that's what's happening.
Yes. And also we found, at least in our practice, that the more enthusiasm and positivity and benefit you can find around that new synapse, also that is just one more thing that will keep it there growing stronger and stronger. So one of the Anat has the method is called her nine essentials, and one of the essentials is enthusiasm. And so she very much encourages everybody, once you realize that something is just a little bit easier, and I'm always asking my students to find ease in what they're doing.
Joy.
Yeah. I go there. Once you realize, like, oh, and it doesn't have to be a big thing. It could be opening a jar of peanut butter. But you're like, oh, that was just a little easier. Oh, that was so nice. And maybe you relate it back to something in class. Maybe it just happened. It really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But you just noticed that something about it was easier. And that is something that's going to get the brain's attention. Mm-hmm. And more, that's how those synapses become stronger and stronger, bigger, bigger. And you're, you know, I liken it to having a big, big leaf fall in autumn. And so you trudge through the leaves and, you know, it doesn't, if the leaves are very deep, all of those leaves as you trudge through are kind of falling back in on themselves, covering up your tracks. But the more you walk that pathway, the more of a trail you make. And the more clear the trail is through the leaves
stays.
And the more it stays. Exactly.
Nice.
So I, you know, look for the things that are functional in your daily life that are easier. How did this help me daily? Sometimes it's novel. For me, I had that experience when I used to be able to do a cartwheel when I was young. And somewhere along the line, I had no ability to do a cartwheel again. I have no idea when I lost it, why I lost it. But I knew that, you know, somewhere in my 20s, I would go to put my hand on the ground, and I thought, I could not physically force myself to do it because it was not safe for me. My brain, thank God for my brain, it stopped me, you know, it wasn't safe. I would have just fallen. But halfway during my training, I woke up knowing that I could do a cartwheel. We never practiced anything of the sort, but I woke up and knew without a doubt that I could do a cartwheel, and I did one.
Oh.
After like over 20 years of not doing cartwheels, I just one day knew I could do it. So sometimes the things are novel. Cartwheels are not going to help me in my daily life. However, the coordination that, you know, I was able to have throughout all of these movements and the variety of movements and the timing, all of those things that enabled me to do the cartwheel, that was important.
Yeah.
And the cartwheel itself was just novel. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that makes life fun.
Right. So what would be kind of typical complaints or reasons why somebody would come to do ABM?
So for a lot of people, it is the typical aches, pains that we're seeing as we get older, becoming more sedentary, having those computer desk jobs. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it is, post-surgical type things where they...
How about postpartum, where your whole middle section no longer functions?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Erin worked on me a couple of weeks ago. And I had to have a cesarean. Uh-huh. And so I was having a lot of pain through my right side and hip. And I don't think... I actually hadn't been to the doctor yet. It was the next day. And after I left, at 45 minutes maybe, I had a lot less pain. Like, it was... moved more freely and would just let go. And the next day I went to the doctor and I was explaining the sensation I had. And he said, oh, that's where I tied your stitches off to the right. So you're probably feeling where that happened. But just after that short amount of time with Erin, I could move that right side. It had more elasticity. I could pick up the leg more freely. Mm. Just by some few simple movements that she was having
me
do.
It's almost like maybe a part of you had said no to that. Movement,
self-protection.
Oh, self-protection definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you just had to open that back up with a yes. Somehow.
Which happens a lot with injuries and
for
surgery.
Good reason.
Mm-hmm. And say again?
For a good reason.
And for a good reason,
yeah.
Yes. You're protecting
okay.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had that experience several times. And the first time I had it was with my right wrist where I was attacked by a dog running. Mm-hmm. And so I broke my wrist and had to have surgery, had to have a plate put in. And so I was very protective of it, but it was also more emotional mm-hmm. because of that fear of being attacked. And I kept reliving that situation mm-hmm. where was the dog going to come after me once I was down. Yeah. And at that point time, I worked with a acupuncturist and with Tracy Maxfield, who we had on another show, mm-hmm. and really was able to not just work through my movement, but allow me to know it's okay to let go. I could start to supinate my hand, pronate my hand, flex and extend my wrist rather than just kind of hold it and lock it into place.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
You know, that makes me think about what happens to people sexually mm-hmm. when they've been traumatized and how the body starts to say no to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could this also translate?
Yes.
This Valentine's Day, we might as well.
Let's go there.
Yeah. So, yes, absolutely. I mean, people do experience these kinds of emotional releases during the work I do, but going really deeply into where you just mentioned, there was a lady who was sexually molested as a little girl, and to the point where she had multiple personalities, mm-hmm. like lots of them. Mm-hmm. And one of her personalities was a woman who dragged her foot mm-hmm. across the ground. And, of course, taking on her other personality, you know, one of her other personalities, she didn't have that. But she, you know, was in therapy at the time. And when somebody asked her about it, she said, well, that personality is a little girl who can't get away. And that's why she's dragging her foot, because she can't get away. Mm-hmm. And so through the process of, you know, a lot of lessons, but she got to the point where she was down to two personalities. She had stopped going to her psychologist.
Oh, my.
She had condensed. Mm-hmm. You guys are going to have the better verbiage for this, so I don't know the right terminology.
You put one of us out of business.
But she was down to two personalities. Mm-hmm. And I was not there for this part, so I didn't get to witness it firsthand, but she told Anat her experience and how doing the method, and this was very, very hard for her because we were down on the floor a lot. She was held down on the floor a lot. Mm. So this was like a ton. This is so hard for her. But she told Anat that...
Anat Banyal.
Yes, that she was down to two personalities. She was so grateful, so happy. And Anat said, well, when you're ready to go to one, this is what you need to do. I don't know what it was. But the very last day, she told everybody, she said, it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, and it took over 3 hours, but I am one person now.
Wow. I'm freaking out.
So I know that it heals in so many ways. So many ways. And I can't tell you how, except that it is movement, and it is based on the way that we learn as babies, even in utero.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because even in your utero, you're moving. You are learning in utero, right? And you come out, and you can't really do anything. You are moving. Your vocal cords are moving to cry or to make noises. Eventually, you know, your arms and legs are making these little, like, involuntary, random kind of spazzy movements, you know? They don't have any meaning. They're just happening. But one day, something happens where the baby notices, oh, that feeling I have when this happens, maybe bumped up against a toy. And it got the baby's attention. And all of a sudden, this involuntary movement can become voluntary because attention and awareness came towards the movement and the feeling of the movement. And that is how it all begins. That is how we learn.
So the attention turns into intention.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's something about that that is really deeply emotional. And I think that it's that connection that none of us really have the words to explain. But it's like you have all the evidence of it in front of you, so you can only explain it by what we're seeing externally. And that gives us a guess at what's happening internally, but we really don't have a way of knowing for sure what it is. We can only speculate.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting here thinking, so my daughter is 7.5 months old, and I just took her on her first plane trip, which was a terrible idea. Because we got delayed, and it was much longer and much more stimulating than I had ever intended for it to be. But she had about 4 days of being super stimulated. She has 5 cousins, and they all think that she's the neatest thing ever. And so they were just in her face the whole time, so completely stimulated. And we get home, and she's just, like, having a total come apart. She can't get her stuff together at all. And she's normally a really relaxed baby, not relaxed at all the last few days. And so I was reading, and there were these articles that were talking about when babies are making huge developmental leaps physically, that it shows up in their emotions. Okay, this makes sense. And they said you can start to predict if that's what's going on, because when your baby is sleeping, their bodies will spontaneously do the movement that they're trying to assimilate. And so so my baby's struggling right now, so she's in bed with me, and I'm, you know, helping her sleep by being near me and all this stuff. And I start noticing that in the middle of sleeping, she'll just sit up and she'll look around for a second, and then she'll lay back down and go back to sleep. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And sometimes she'll do it and she'll look at me, and you can tell it's this, like, really intense experience she's having of, what did my body just do? Like, I don't know what's happening to me. And you can see that everything in her, all of her emotions, all of her cognition, all of her body is, like, working together to try to make this huge developmental leap. And I feel like what you're talking about is helping people recreate that when something has gone off the rails and it's not working the way it was supposed to, or they missed something at some point. It's so natural. This is the way it's supposed to work. And so what you're able to do is kind of help people manufacture that after the fact, like what was supposed to happen spontaneously, but for whatever reason didn't get to. And now we can help the brain do it, which I think is just an amazing thing to watch people, even, you know, 7 months old or 70 years old, that our brain still can do that. Yeah.
Personally, I'm noticing an impact. Okay, so I told you that one of the things I hoped would happen by taking your class was that it would help my piano.
I remember that, yeah.
Well, and you asked me a question halfway into what I've done so far about, did it have something to do with my eyes? Was I noticing any change with my eyes and being able to read the music? And I was like, ooh, now that you mention it. And lo and behold, that is very much what's happening. It's not so much a finger thing or an arm thing or an upper body thing as it is an eye thing. Somehow I'm right where I need to be. My eyes are right where they need to be, and they can keep going. And I think before, there was a stop. there was something stopping.
They weren't tracking us.
Yeah, it was almost like just somebody put a block right there. Mm-hmm. And so my eyes would get stuck. And so then I would go back to staring at the keyboard, and then I'd get lost. And I don't think I'm doing that as much. I think I'm, like, clearly and safely just kind of sailing along line to line.
Wonderful.
Isn't that cool?
It is cool. Yeah. I love how it helps everybody in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. You asked the question earlier, who would be the people that I would see? It really does run the gamut. We work with dancers, musicians, athletes, people that are, you would think, don't need any help mm-hmm. at all, right? Because unless if they were in pain. Mm-hmm. But actually, this helps you do better what you already do well, which is really, really cool.
Yeah.
But it also helps you do what you cannot yet do. And so when I, you know, stroke people who've had strokes, little children who've had the lobes of their brain cut down the middle so that they don't have seizures, you know, autism, cerebral palsy, mm-hmm. all kinds of, I've worked with children with genetic abnormalities, things mm-hmm. they just don't know. But it doesn't mean you get rid of a diagnosis. It means they move forward and they move in through these possibilities. And once you create a new possibility and move into it, you're just ready for the next possibility. So you keep moving forward.
Yeah. Rather than in so many of those things that you described. In so many of those things that you described, you would actually expect deterioration, mm-hmm. that things would move in the opposite direction. And so a lot of us would settle for just stopping the deterioration. But
just
what you're saying, yeah, what you're saying is that you can actually open an avenue for progression with these things that we
absolutely
would not expect progression at all.
Yes.
Even mm-hmm. with things as simple as aging. We yes. expect to always get worse at things as we get older. And what you're saying is it doesn't have to be that way. That's yeah. not inevitable.
Right. It is anti-aging. Mm-hmm. In part too, because it opens you up creatively.
Yeah.
And that is so important as we get older.
And it grounds you. There's a grounding factor, being more present in the moment in your body, which I think is also very anti-aging, mm-hmm. because when we're disassociating habitually, ungrounded, we're losing information, we're losing mm-hmm. moments, we're losing access, we're losing connectivity.
And therefore losing confidence in ourselves.
Yeah.
We can't trust ourselves, we can't trust our bodies. We start stumbling, we start, doing things, forgetting things, dropping
cognitive
things.
Decline.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there's just so much decline that happens when it's almost like we give over control of those processes and believe that it is hopeless, believe that there's nothing we can mm-hmm. do about it. And you see people like take a hard left turn in deterioration when that starts mm-hmm. to happen.
So I always have a hard time describing what you do to clients that I would like to send you to try this. And a lot of our listeners are like, I get what they're saying, but it doesn't quite make sense what she
make
does.
Make it concrete.
Where could they go? Yes. How can I see this?
Yeah.
Where could they go to take a look at maybe some examples of mm-hmm. what the movements look like and what's going on in a class?
Sure. So I would absolutely direct you to YouTube. Look up Anat Banyel. A-N-A-T, last name, B-A-N-I-E-L. You will find lots of different videos there to watch. She even has a TED Talk or two that you can look at that has a lesson, like a short movement lesson that you can do on the spot. And she is really more well known in the special needs community for children. However, as we're discussing here, you don't have to be a child or have special needs to benefit from the movement and from the method. I've used the method alone in my child rearing, in the way I interact with my husband in our marriage, in my relationships when I was working at the advertising company. There are so many ways just to use the method. And that is one thing that we try and really steer the families we work with to the method so that they can utilize it in their daily lives.
So can you give kind of a succinct explanation of the method? Because you talked about kind of the movement portion of it.
Right.
So talk a little bit about what that method is and maybe some examples of how that would look in a relationship, in a marriage, things like that.
So the method is made up of the nine essentials, and I'll just name them off. Movement with attention, slow, variation, subtlety, enthusiasm, flexible goals, the learning switch, which is getting the brain's attention, imagination and dreams, and lastly, awareness. So you can be attentive to something, but usually when your attention is on something, it's very laser focused. And when you have awareness, conversely, you're able to understand or see more parts of the picture. Mm-hmm. So your vision widens, your perspective
yes.
widens, so you can see more of the picture. And
yes.
maybe everything becomes a bit softer looking. You can't see as many details, but you can see more of what's going on.
And the relevant ones.
Yes. So we slow, literally slow. I may speak slower. If I sing with my son, he loves to sing, but so many times the words and the songs go so quickly, he can't sing as fast as the song is going, but so he doesn't join in. But if I slow it down, absolutely, he'll start to sing along. Mm-hmm. Another slow one, easy, and again, this is for a child, but when you're changing a diaper, like, really slowing it down. And I know that you don't have time to be slow all the time, but you very gently start to detach the Velcro one little bit at a time so that the child, it gives them time to feel.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them time to sense. When everything is going past you at whirlwind speed, mm-hmm. you do not have time to feel or sense what's happening.
Mm.
So when you slow it down, it really gives all of your senses the ability to do their job.
And to digest what's coming in.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which makes sense when you're in a high stress or trauma situation where it's coming at you very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it takes a long time after the event to process.
Mm-hmm.
You go through these real tense emotional, you know, tightening in the chest feelings, all that stress we talked about earlier, until you're able to slow down and process what had just happened to you.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you experienced something
yes.
and you relive it over and
mm-hmm.
over.
Uh-huh. That's actually one of the, like, you know how we all say that as you get older, time goes faster? So when they did research on why that we all sense that, it's because of the lack of novelty as we get older. We've already
mm-hmm.
done this, right? So we're not interested in what it feels like to brush my teeth because I've done it a million times.
Exactly.
But when you're two and you're brushing your teeth for the first time, that's a whole lot of sensation coming into your body. Like, this is minty, it's frothy, it's scrubby,
it's gaggy.
There's water involved, right? There's like
uh-huh.
so much sensation. And so that time dilation for children is something that we forget as we get older, and we push them and rush them through all of this stimulation, which to us seems like no big deal, but to them it's so intense, and we wonder why they get overwhelmed.
So there's this concept that I've done some reading about called dysmetria. And in the trauma world, we think of dysmetria as somebody having trouble controlling their movements, either overshooting them or undershooting them. And you see people on both ends of the spectrum in extremes. An undershooting of movement would be like, I'm trying not to take up space. I'm trying to be small. I'm trying not to have much movement at all. I don't want you to notice me, so I'm going to keep it small. So
mm-hmm.
those people are easy to miss. Like when you're walking down the sidewalk and you pass them, you might not even see them because they're literally trying not to take up physical space.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of movement that they're not going to be able to do just because they're not allowed to do it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then on the other end of it, with the overshooting dysmetria, are
uncontrolled movements, and you see this a lot in kids that can't sit still. You know, they're old enough to be able to regulate and sit in a classroom for a little while, and they just can't. Or they even have, like, Parkinsonian mm-hmm. movements mm-hmm. that aren't related to any other kind of disorder except the traumatized brain. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I'm reminded of that as we're talking. Does that sound like the kind of thing you would work with?
Yeah. We come at it probably from a different angle, but absolutely. So, you see that in movement. You see that in the way people emote. Some people have no facial expression at all.
Yeah.
Some people are larger than life, and everything is
over the top
mm-hmm. in both directions. Mm-hmm. You're on the mountaintop or you're in the pit of the valley, mm-hmm. but that's where they are all the time.
Yeah.
So from the work I do, what I would do first is support them in those things, which sounds so counterintuitive to most people because that's exactly what you're trying to help them out of.
So you're going to affirm that.
Yeah.
Validate that reaction.
Mm-hmm. And I can do that in a few different ways. I can do that in part by mimicking it back to them. You have to be sensitive and careful and, you know, all those mm-hmm. things. But there are ways to gently kind of just mirror that. But also as they are in those, you know, highs and lows or big movements, small movements, just like you were talking about earlier, you're asking them, what do you feel right now? So before you said, what does that pain feel like? Or what does that movement feel like? But also, what does your heartbeat feel like? What does your breathing feel like? Are your eyes really wide open? All those things show up in little movements and big movements, in the way they vocalize. Some people, you know, have hearing problems, so they're always loud, but other people are just loud and they don't know. Mm-hmm. And so if I have somebody coming in like that, I might just practice with them. I say, okay, do this, whatever it is. Say, I love popcorn. All right, I'm making this up. I love popcorn. All right, and let's just pretend it was, you know, kind of loud. I'm like, okay, I need you to say that louder. I love popcorn. And louder. I love popcorn. All right, now can you take it down? I love popcorn. All of a sudden, it kind of helps them widen their range.
Yeah. Because it's almost like they're stuck at a certain point.
Yes, yeah. They're stuck and they don't see it.
Right.
They don't hear it. They don't see it.
It doesn't feel loud to them.
Exactly.
Like my eyes on the music.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Stuck. Mm-hmm. Stuck right there. Can't go there.
Mm-hmm.
So this reminds me of things like breath holding, mm-hmm. where when you're working with someone that has a lot of trauma, you're almost constantly redirecting them back to their mm-hmm. body to try to increase their awareness so that you can get information and they can get information from their body because they get so disconnected. You use the example of someone with multiple personalities, and I do a lot of work with DID, dissociative identity, and have had more than one person, but one in particular that I can think of where there's a particular part that shakes just almost constantly. And I can always tell when she's transitioned into that part because her body just begins to vibrate. And when I draw attention to it, it stops.
Mm.
And it's just the most interesting thing. And I've experimented with it like every which way to kind of try to understand what's going on. But the minute that she becomes aware, it stops. Mm. And so every time I see it starting now, we've kind of made a deal that it's okay for me to draw attention to it so that her body can begin to calm down again. Because it's almost like that energy has no place to go. But the minute that we can start to bring awareness, it can regulate and it can begin to calm because it needs to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
That part of her was such an invisible part that was scared so much of the time that was never ever seen and was alone so much. But the minute someone says, I see you and I see what's happening to you, it stops just like that. And it's the most bizarre, like I've done a lot of weird stuff with clients, but like that experience is just so affirming of that gentle awareness is already healing. Like, that experience for a lot of people to just say, I see what's happening with you. Do you see what's happening with you? Already begins that healing and that connection.
Mm-hmm. And I love that because I feel like so much of the pain we have is because we don't feel seen.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. And we don't see ourselves. Mm-hmm. And those two things are so important.
It's really profound. Will you say that one more time? I want to soak it up. So much of the pain.
So much of the pain we have is due to us not being seen by others, mm-hmm. and not seeing or knowing ourselves. So seeing ourselves, being known by others, and knowing ourselves. Yeah.
But knowing yourself is really important, I think, for your emotional development well into your older age. And it amazes me, working with clients in the realm of physical fitness, after you work with them for a period of time, every week, multiple times a week, sometimes you really start to see sometimes older people in their 60s, 70s, 80s that you realize they don't know themselves. Mm-hmm. And it makes me want to stop, and Deborah works upstairs and say, you know what? You really don't need to be exercising with me.
Like, really? They walk you upstairs.
Yes, yeah. Let's walk upstairs because you really think that they need to find themselves in order for what you're doing with them to be more effective.
And yet that's exactly what they're doing with you.
It is. This is true. Finding themselves in a way.
Themselves.
They really need both of us. They need all of us, mm-hmm. here at the table.
Yeah.
But
well, and maybe that's kind of a good way of really succinctly trying to understand what you do. It's that perfect cross-section between traditional talk therapy, if you can call what Deborah and I do traditional, which you really can't, and what Shauna does with movement. What you're doing is that collision of those two and really helping people do both of those kinds of work all at the same time and facilitating that kind of connection, where I think For all of us, part of the reason we're doing this podcast is because we know that that connection needs to be there more. And when we're sitting on our couches and just using our mouths, there's only so much we can do. And when you're doing exercise and can't really address directly the emotional component, you feel a lack there. Mm-hmm. And there's just kind of this intuition of these things have to happen together. Sometimes they only happen together.
Mm, yeah.
They cannot happen without each other. Yeah.
I am so interested in getting some yoga training or getting some something training, something physical, because I really feel.
Yeah, I'm about to do Reiki training because
I thought
you
already had that.
Well, I do. I'm going to do it more.
Like, wait a minute.
Because I really like it. Well, and I think for me, that's kind of where I found that connection point between the physical, the spiritual, the mental, the emotional. All of it kind of just shows up all at once in that setting.
Well, somebody just called us energy workers.
Yeah.
And I said, what?
I think all of us are energy workers.
I would have not copped to that. Like, just a few
months
ago.
Oh, I would so happily. Like, I wish I could put that on my business card and not scare people away.
I never have, but I see what Melissa's saying. Yes, we are dealing with energy, whether it be, it's all physical energy. Our emotions are physical energy as well. We're exuding this physical energy, some of us more than others, mm-hmm. and we're either trying to dampen that down or make it grow, make it blossom. And I think that's probably what we're seeing a lot with this lack of emotional development in people who are older, who don't know themselves. They haven't allowed that energy to burst forth and be in touch with it.
So one of my favorite Einstein quotes is, everything is vibration, right? Mm. Like, well, and Tesla has actually a very, very similar quote. But so these guys were onto something way before we had the science to explain what was going on. But more and more, if you look at biomedical science, we look at what they're able to do with measuring the electricity of emotion. All of this science is kind of converging to show us that it is all energy, and not the kind of Sedona, Arizona, sit on a rock kind of energy, right? Like, that's not what we're talking about. Although, sometimes you have
happening there. I'm not judging that.
It's all vibration.
It is all vibration. And that doesn't mean, you know, we say om and it fixes everything. But what it does mean is that we can understand that every time we shift something emotionally, it's energy shifting. We can see that happen in the body when we do EKGs, mm-hmm. ECGs, all of that. When we're doing exercise, the same thing is happening. And if you guys don't know about the Heart Math Institute, please go Google the Heart Math Institute. It will change your life. And they can explain this in so much more detail than I will try to get into. And we should probably do a whole episode specifically about this because mm-hmm. there's a lot to it. But
I reference that a lot in the tapping training.
Yes, because there is so much science coming out about it. So rather than speculating and kind of all these religious theories or spiritual theories, we can actually say energetically, biologically, here's what we see the body doing. And the more we understand about that, the more we can help people manipulate it. And I think what happens for those of us that are helping people heal is that intuitively, we are teaching people how to work energetically, how to move energy in their body, how to change the energy of their body, and ultimately raise the vibration of their body. Because that is where healing occurs. One of the most kind of potent examples of this, when I started first reading about it, was when they measure the electricity of a person's body, there is a set point of a healthy body. There's kind of a range, right? As we get sick, that drops lower and lower and lower. So somebody that has cancer will be operating 20, 30 points below a normal hertz.
What about the flu?
I don't know. I don't know if they measure the flu, but I would guess that it's lower because we certainly feel lower. Mm-hmm. And when we're sick, that is actually part of what we're feeling when we feel depressed when we're sick.
Yes.
We're super sluggish when we're sick. And our body is naturally dropping its energy to hold us still so that we can heal. Okay. Anyway, I could talk about this for a very, very long time. But I think that, you know, Erin, what you're doing is teaching people how to manipulate that energy to allow healing to happen in a really spontaneous way, because I really believe brains and bodies, they just want to heal. And there's so many barriers that get in that way. And what we do as energy healers, if we want to call it that, or therapists of any kind, is help people get rid of those barriers so that mm-hmm. it can happen.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think that is something that is really special about the group classes. I love working one-on-one with people, and there are some things you can only do one-on-one. But when you get a good group of people that have been coming for a while to a neuro movement class, you walk in and there is a lightness. And I really do feel like however you think about energy, about walking, you know, feeling people's energy or just feeling like there's some positivity in the room, however you understand that is real. Like there, it is real. So I think that walking into that, someone for the first time walking into that is just going to benefit. And it doesn't have to be just one of my classes. It can be in a yoga class, in a jazzercise class, whatever, at a church, you know, wherever. But getting yourself into a very good energy group of people. I think that in itself, if you can't do anything else, search out a group, because that will just lift your spirit. And that, I think, I mean, I don't know energetically or vibrationally what that means mm-hmm. exactly, except to say that you feel better.
Yeah.
And that is the whole thing. You know, if your vibration is increased, you're going to see it because you feel better.
Yeah.
And that's what we're all looking for.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's great advice.
So, Erin, your website is moveyourbrain.com.
Yep.
If anyone is interested in finding more out about Erin and ABM. And this has been a great episode, ladies. Great discussion. So thank you again for joining Reconceive, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much, guys. See you later.
Thank you so much for listening to Reconceive. Don't forget to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes so that you don't miss an episode. Follow us at Reconceive Podcast on Facebook or Instagram, and find us on our website at beyondstudio417.com/reconceive. And if anything you've heard today has made you wonder if it's time to reach out for help, please don't ignore that. message us for assistance in finding a qualified therapist in your area. We would enjoy helping you in that way. From all of us here at Reconceive, see you next time.